ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
When you want to be stopped in your tracks.
I'm running to shoot it. It's 50-50. You can catch his gun or he shoot you.
When you want to know the truth.
She was brainwashing her from the start.
We're here to investigate.
Something's gone wrong. Big time.
Search Background Briefing Podcast on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, the Australian stock market has surged after Donald Trump's declaration that oil shipments will soon start flowing freely through the Strait of Hormuz. It comes as the RBA starts its deliberations about what to do with interest rates. So does this announcement potentially lower the chance of a further hike? Welcome to ABC Business Daily. I'm Carrington Clark.
And I'm ABC business reporter Steph Chalmers.
Steph, here we are. It's RBA rates decision eve, but the Reserve Bank actually starts its meetings today, and they've got a pretty important, seemingly important piece of information now to digest. It appears that either there's a peace deal that's about to be signed, or depending on your terminology, but it's some sort of agreement that both the US and Iran say will result in the opening up once again of the Strait of Hormuz. Now, there is disagreement potentially about who will control the Strait of Hormuz. Iran says that they and Oman will decide which ships are going through that strait. Donald Trump has said that won't be the case. It doesn't appear at this point that there'll be a toll placed on it. But how important do you think this declaration will be, both for the supply of energy into the global market, but also for the inflation outlook for us here in Australia and what that does to the Reserve Bank's decisions about what interest rate settings are correct?
Certainly will make for an interesting meeting for them, as you say, kicking off today, just right ahead of them meeting, essentially. So at least they'll have a fair bit to talk about, you'd have to say. But this isn't expected to be finalised till Friday. And obviously we haven't been at this point before yet, but we've had a number of sort of false starts, ceasefires along the way. So you'd have to say it probably makes it more likely that the RBA will sit on its hands and wait for more information to emerge because, you know, I mean, the call was for them to stay on hold anyway.
Yeah.
And there's no one predicting a rate cut by any means tomorrow. So you'd have to say it makes sense for them to wait and see what the terms are, as you say, how easily oil is going to flow, as Donald Trump says, through the strait, and how quickly the market normalizes and how long the tail of the disruption will be. So there's nothing that's happened that I think presses them to move. If anything, it gives them more certainty that their wait and see approach they sort of indicated in the post-meeting press conference last meeting, you know, might actually be fitting for these circumstances.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think they were already inclined to sit and wait to see what impact the previous three interest rate hikes are actually having on the economy. One of the differences between this meeting and say the last meeting is we don't have that statement of monetary policy that gets released quarterly, which gives updated forecasts about which way they're heading, which way the Australian economy is heading, what's happening overseas. Yes, officials from the Reserve Bank would still be providing updates to the board to make sure that they're making an informed decision. But I think they were already very inclined to wait until the next meeting when we have that statement of monetary policy, where there are those updates in order to make a decision. And probably this announcement does just mean that that decision to effectively wait is probably the right one to see exactly how this plays out. Now, there are multiple days between now and when we think the Strait of Hormuz is going to be opening up. A lot can happen, as we know. We have had multiple false dawns throughout this conflict. It is possible something will happen to shift it. But as you say, we haven't gotten this close to a deal being signed before. So there is reasons why we're seeing the market respond so positively today. Now, as I was watching this on Radio National Breakfast this morning, the futures were suggesting maybe a 0.4% drop. That was on hopes that a deal was imminent. Instead, we had, 1.4% rise at the open, which is a very significant rise after a very strong day on Friday as well. Do you think investors finally think this is over? Is that what this is all about?
That seems to be what sentiment is suggesting. As you say, sitting here around 11:40, we've got the ASX 200 up around 1.4%. So pretty strong rally there. Although, as you say, Wall Street was already positive on Friday. We had things like the SpaceX IPO also floating around. So I don't think it was ever going to be a negative day. But if you look at the reaction across Asian markets as well, opening a short time ago, we've got the Nikkei up 5%. So that's a really strong rally. We've also got South Korea's KOSPI up more than 5%. So these are Asian countries that are energy importers. So it makes sense that they have a very positive reaction to thinking that energy markets are going to normalize, hopefully, in coming weeks. So yeah, I think it seems to be that, you know, all the reaction hasn't already played out in anticipation. There has been a positive boost. The Aussie dollar, which is also quite sensitive to risk events, was also higher this morning. So it seems to be people are buying it so far.
Yeah, I mean, we have seen, particularly on the Seoul KOSPI, a huge amount of volatility recently. As you say, both Japan and South Korea, massive importers of energy from around the world, including energy from Australia as well in forms of gas, but also refined fuels. They are particularly vulnerable and have proven to be particularly vulnerable to the interruption of supply. But they're also bets on risk into the future. They're both countries that have big tech sectors, South Korea in particular, very important in the global computer chip manufacturing space. And so when people are feeling positive about the future, we do tend to see pretty strong results. And that's what's playing out here again. Turning to the Australian economy, I mean, obviously one of the issues for the Reserve Bank will be trying to figure out exactly what an opening up of the Strait of Hormuz actually means. Now, we know that the markets were pricing in and have been pricing in for multiple months that once the Strait was open, that you'd see a pretty substantial fall in the prices of oil pretty quickly. But we are expecting that the price of oil will still not return to the price that it was before the start of this conflict for a very long time. When you are the Reserve Bank and you're looking at this, and obviously the big battle for the first half of this year was about inflation, how do you think they'll try to take that into account when determining what the correct interest rate settings are?
Yeah, as you say, we've seen, you know, the oil futures drop about 4% this morning. So we're, you know, back about just around $81 US a barrel. So still,
and that's even less than what when we recorded Fuelcast a little while ago. It's dropped even further from then.
Yeah, so really early days, if not, you know, early minutes really, of the market reaction. So what we've heard from economists talking to some this morning about how they think this will play out, obviously this is oil futures prices, which is where the market is betting the price is going essentially, whereas it'll take longer for oil spot prices, which is the actual price people are paying now, to kind of react, because it's going to take a long time for things to normalize. Some analysts were pointing out that, you know, once ships are actually getting in and loading up cargo, then it's going to take, that's got to leave, you know, the facilities for it then to be refilled from new production. So this isn't something that's going to normalize super fast. So it'll be interesting to see how long that plays out, and that'll be, I guess, up to the RBA forecasters taking advice from these sort of analysts, what oil price they factor into their forecasts. And then for things like food inflation, for example, we hadn't really even seen that hit of fertilizer being disrupted play out yet. We were talking to some of farming industry people who were saying, well, people had already secured their fertilizer for these winter crops. So if there was going to be an impact, it would actually be next year. So it's hard to tell really when we haven't even seen the initial impact hit yet, what the recovery from that impact will be. So I think for the RBA, it probably points to waiting to see how it plays out. And we know that they had already indicated that the rate hikes they took earlier this year was to deal with the pre-war inflation. So we haven't really seen them act on the war inflation or the predicted war inflation yet at all. So it's kind of hard to talk about how they're going to change their action now when they really were saying, actually, this was a pre-existing problem we were already dealing with. They haven't really shown what course of action they think was necessary to deal with the impact of the war yet.
Yeah, I mean, this is such a messy period for the Reserve Bank. I mean, they pay the big bucks in order to make these decisions, and they have some of the best experts in the world to be dealing with modelling to try to figure out how this is going to play out in the Australian economy, but it has been a particularly messy period for them. I spoke about this last week with Ian Verinder, but the divergence among leading economists about what the Reserve Bank will not only be doing in terms of the next few meetings, but also into next year is so apparent. And we actually had even greater divergence by the end of last week. Well, now you've kind of got a situation out of the big four, at least, where Westpac is the outlier, where you've got Westpac still predicting that the Reserve Bank will hike interest rates twice, not at this meeting, but in August and then in September, in order to deal with the inflationary pressures in the economy. The other three big banks now predict that there's no more hikes, and in fact, we will see cuts next year, either two or even potentially three cuts next year, so potentially offsetting completely what we've had this year, which would be a very strange cycle of like three cuts last year, then three hikes this year, and then three cuts the year after. Usually they don't want to be chopping and changing so abruptly, but we are in strange times. How do you make sense of this divergence between people who are all looking at the same data, pretty similar training, all experts in their fields and coming to very different answers?
Yeah, I mean, it's with the Westpac, we know their chief economist is Lucy Ellis, who is out of, you know, those big four economists. She's one of the more recent RBA insiders. She was the assistant governor of economics at the RBA before she came to that job. So that, you know, perhaps she knows how confusing it's going to be for them and just thinks, let's just wait and see what they think. Who knows? I mean, the call about August from her, I think, makes sense in terms of if they were going to make another move. We've talked about before, they release a quarterly statement of economic forecasts, and that would time with the August meeting. They'd have those forecasts to discuss, and we'd have quarterly consumer price index data to give a more kind of thorough picture of where inflation is heading ahead of that meeting. So, yeah, I mean, it is surprising to see that level of divergence, but the market seems to kind of be on the side of there's absolutely no chance of anything happening this month at least, and a little bit of a chance of a bit of a further hike. But I think the post-meeting statement this month will be crucial in indicating how long they are willing to sit on their hands and see how this plays out, or if they're trying to, you know, keep the market primed for we may need to take further action, i.e. hike rates. I don't think we're going to get any kind of easing bias or indication of imminent rate cuts coming through at all. I think probably it's the dovish kind of easing bias would be around staying on hold, because people, even those who are predicting the next move being down, that's not really till next year they're talking about that.
Yeah, I think the accompanying statement for the decision tomorrow will be much more important than it's maybe been recently, because I think they will need to try to explain exactly where the board thinks rates might be going, any indication of whether or not there is an easing bias or a tightening bias, or whether or not they're going to neutral, or how they see this playing through. I mean, one of the advantages they have over what they had in previous years was that we do get these monthly inflation numbers now. So we're getting more regular, thorough updates about what inflationary pressures are in the economy. One of the other difficulties that they have between this meeting and the next meeting is that it's almost certain, I think, that agreement holds, is the deal, as Donald Trump calls it, that it's very unlikely that the federal government will extend the excise cut. That means that there will be a pretty significant jump for people when they go to fill up a tank of fuel. That means the inflation numbers that we see for July will once again show a pretty significant hit. Now, that's a volatile item that the Reserve Bank normally likes to look through that. But again, it'll just make it's going to create a real messy picture for them, isn't it? About trying to determine how much of that to take into account and what that flow through could mean to other parts of the economy.
Yeah, as you say, they really try and focus on that trimmed mean figure of underlying inflation, which would strip out things like the fuel excise discount potentially coming off and the full excise coming through and hitting people at the pump. So I think economists will know that, the RBA will know that. But as you say, in terms of communicating with the public, which we know sentiment has already taken quite a big hit, there's a number of other factors that we've been talking about in recent weeks that are perhaps leading to households feeling less secure, feeling less wealthy, that wealth effect with housing. We've seen the market start to cool and turn in the big cities, and the ongoing discussion about the budget changes and how that will affect the housing market. So I think It would be shocking, really, if they did something in the next few months, but they've shocked us before. I just think things are very uncertain. We haven't seen things play out in inflation really beyond that initial petrol hit. And if that's then going to kind of come up again, why not wait and see if, you know, the underlying inflation pulse is increasing?
You mentioned the budget changes. We do have the CGT Senate inquiry happening at the moment. It's early hours on what's going to be a two days of hearings. I mean, this is interesting, and I think it's important to understand the context, because you do have a pretty ferocious campaign currently being waged by certain sections of the business community against the government's plans changes to the CGT discount. You also have pushback from other people who support the changes. What's fascinating, though, is that people have complained that this is only 2 days of hearings and you need more time. Business groups are saying, well, this is such a major change that we need more time in order to work through some of these issues. But we did just have a Senate inquiry about this issue. CGT changes, I mean, the amount of inquiries we've had over the last few years about this issue, it feels like something that we have talked about a lot. Though in fairness, perhaps the focus has always tended to be on the interaction with the property market. But the thing that seems to have upset business groups in particular is more about how this will work for startups and for investment in Australian businesses.
Yeah, it's almost kind of strange that we're having this sort of snap two-day inquiry, but we also don't know what proposed carve-outs would look like. So we're debating the idea almost again, which is what we kind of already did in March when there was a Senate inquiry. And I went back and had a look at the findings. There were four findings of that inquiry, and they were really around that, you know, it does distort decision making, it does incentivize tax planning. There's evidence that existing housing stock makes up the substantial share of capital gains benefits. So these are all issues that have been hashed out already before we knew what form changes could make in the budget. And some of the witnesses are even the same. So we have, you know, some private investors that appeared at the previous inquiry are up again. So it is interesting whether, I guess, they'll use it to kind of push for specific carve-outs or exemptions that they want to make. But yeah, it was the three major business groups kind of came out in lockstep against it. But we have also heard from, for example, independent economist Sol Eslake. He'll be appearing as a witness, and he was saying that, you know, it really is an appropriate response to make these changes.
Sol's position is that, yes, when it comes to property, this is a good change, because he does think that there was you're incentivizing people to invest in existing property in particular. It did mean that first home buyers were competing against investors who were getting this tax advantage, and that wasn't a good outcome. But it does feel like the government was caught slightly on the back foot when it comes to how this would work, particularly when it came to startups. The government has said that they are talking to people, trying to sort this out. It is a little bit surprising that this wasn't thought about before they made such a big change, but I guess because the property market and people's ability to buy into the property market was the big issue that they were trying to solve, that it wasn't treated as the central issue. Will they be willing to carve that off? Is there a way of doing that that isn't so messy that it actually causes more problems? I think that's the kind of issue that they're trying to deal with. So maybe this two-day inquiry will be able to thrash out some of those issues in a way that hopefully creates some light and understanding.
Yeah, so Sol Eslake was speaking to one of our colleagues in Canberra ahead of this, and he said it's not like Australia has turned into a nation of entrepreneurs since we had the changes in 1999. So I guess it's not like it's spurred all this investment. So what are the chances that it's all going to flee away from if the changes are reversed? I think that is an interesting point. Could we see some of these people who were in there to discuss the housing aspect be grilled on the investment aspect, or, you know, where the carve-outs could create further distortions? Obviously, part of the effect the government is saying they want to achieve is to remove investment distortions. So if you're then making carve-outs to changes, are you just getting into more of a mess in the future potentially? Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see. I wonder if the government is just betting that the voices coming out against this are quite loud and quite influential. But as you say, housing has really been that issue that the electorate has been talking about so much. Other voices we're hearing on the front pages of some of the paper, the majority view, or they're just the loudest view, I guess we'll have to see.
Yeah, let's see. I mean, we've got 2 days of this. I think tomorrow may be slightly overshadowed maybe by the RBA discussions, although we don't expect an actual change, so maybe that won't be as big an issue. But I am fascinated to see if the government decides that they do want to compromise on some of these issues, particularly when it comes to the startup community, about investment in smaller businesses, and when we might actually hear some of the details about those changes. It feels like it's probably heading in that direction, some sort of a compromise. But I think when it comes to CGT discount on property, that feels like it's basically a lock for the government. I think they think they're on pretty firm ground. Steph, always a pleasure. That is it for today's episode of ABC Business Daily. We'll be back with another episode tomorrow. Make sure you're following us on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts. And with tax time just around the corner, we're putting out a special call for questions. As the financial year comes to an end, we're planning a special series of bonus episodes unpacking what you need to know about super, about write-offs, property and shares, and what you need to keep in mind for years ahead. So if there's something puzzling you as you get ready to file, drop us a line or a voice note at abcbusinessdaily@abc.net.au, and hopefully we can provide you with some insight. Catch you next time, Steph.
Bye.